Welcome to Mustard A&A's. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVDs, video games. And Richard woke up about 2 minutes ago, so
yep.
It's going to be stimulating conversation today.
No, I'm awake. I just,
you
just
sound
slept
like
right
it.
Through things. Well, I've been sick, so I've been, but I feel pretty good.
Unfortunately, it's the week before the Super Bowl, so there's no football to watch while we're taping.
Yeah.
And I was playing Xbox right when you called, so I turned that off, and now I guess it was on Universal HD, and there's some sort of BMX. Or do they still call, like, just bicycle stunt riding BMX?
God, I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
Every single ramp has a Mountain Dew logo on it. It's pretty funny. Anyway.
Mountain Dew is so extreme.
I know. Extreme. Although I will take a Mountain Dew ad in front of the movie instead of Citizen Soldier any day of the week.
Yeah.
So you've seen a new movie.
I did. I saw
Let's discuss.
My dad and uncle decided to take me to see Rambo. John Rambo. A couple days ago. It was I don't know, how do I describe it? It was an okay movie, actually. It was weird. It's horrifically violent. And in this kind of new way I haven't seen before, it was sort of informed by all these videos you'll see on some of those websites that show, like, Iraqis getting killed and stuff. You'll see that it's been definitely informed by that. It's no longer this different kind of violence, but it's this bodies and limbs being torn to shreds kind of violence. It's really quite awful. And then they didn't just use, like, a regular gun. The big weapon in this one is, like, a 50 caliber machine gun, which will cut you to ribbons. So throughout the movie, you're regularly seeing people just having legs cut in half, bodies cut in half. It's really, people just turned into meat. Really, really probably the most violent movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
So, and it's weird because they did a unique thing. I mean, Stallone did a really good job with this in that he decided to, what he did was he totally took out virtually everything that was dated and Uber 80s about the original Rambo movies. He just cut them out. He didn't make it quite so jingoistic. There's very little of this America this or that or whatever stuff. He just made a lean, mean movie, and with the exception of an absolutely insane, crazy villain, which is the Burmese military. Oh, and also, I'd forgotten, he had to do a short montage from the previous movies, which he'd also did in Rocky Balboa, which was just terrible. But other than that, it's just a lean, mean movie of a guy going in, rescuing these missionaries, and getting the hell out. Just a vile, violent movie.
Interesting.
So
that's it's good. I'm glad that it's, you know, not a disaster, and, you know, because, you know, you always hear that Sylvester Stallone is such a nice guy, and
yeah.
You want to, you know, I kind of want to pull for him, even though I have almost no interest in seeing it myself.
I wouldn't have seen it, and honestly, it's not totally my cup of tea, but I thought it was interesting as a counterpoint to the current sort of standard of what makes a cool action violent movie, which is like 300, Beowulf, that kind of thing. And that, this is nothing like that. There's nothing
right.
Stylized. There's no quick cuts to, in fact, I'm trying to think, I can't remember slow motion in this, you know, which is like, you know, there's just nothing like that. It's sort of like they just did what they did. They took a 1980s concept and movie and then just used 2007 standards for violence. It was, I don't know, it was weird. Anyway, not a great movie, but definitely not a disaster. And it'll be interesting to see if it's popular, because I don't think Rambo, the name, has any cachet. People forget Rambo 3.
I think it has a bit. I think it
maybe
has
a little bit.
Well, I mean, I don't know about cachet, but it's recognizable.
Yeah, but what I guess I'm talking about is the audience for this is 18 to 24 year olds, and
right.
don't forget that when Rambo, and remember it was Rambo the second one, Rambo First Blood Part 2 came out. When Rambo First Blood Part 2 came out, those 18 to 24 year olds were either zero or like 2 years old.
Right.
So not a single one of them was even really alive to remember that. And Rambo 3, people forget, wasn't even really a success. They spent a crap load of money on it.
I don't forget that.
But it kind of flopped. So, but anyway.
I am the proud owner of Rambo 3.
Are you? So suffice it to say, it was interesting. Although it was weird when they did cut to the montage, you kind of look at, I mean, Stallone has done an amazing job keeping himself in shape. I mean, the fact is the guy's 61, he looks great, obviously enhanced by human growth hormones, as he's admitted, and he looks great, but so you kind of think, oh, he hasn't changed much, but then they would show the montage and you'd totally forget what he looked like in those mid-80s ones. I mean, he looked like in those like a Chippendales dancer. And you forgot about that. And he had these big giant lats and pecs, and it was crazy how much different he looked, although you didn't really recognize that until they decided to put the montage into place.
Yeah, that's interesting. I should clarify. The reason I'm the proud owner of Rambo 3 is it's one of the 5 free DVDs that came to me with my purchase of my original DVD player back in the day.
Really?
It was, and you got to choose from like 10. God, did you get to choose or was it just what they gave you? But
I remember right, those deals they gave you, you got to choose, but it was within a very limited selection.
Yeah, so I got Rambo 3, Lost in Space.
The William Hurt thing?
Yeah, Devil's Advocate.
Good movie.
Al Pacino. And I think
a naked Charlize Theron.
I was going to say, the only reason I kept that was because of the... Was that Charlize Theron at the end? No.
She's the husband or the wife of
that's not
Keanu
one.
Reeves.
No, that was a naked redheaded chick at the end.
Oh.
And I don't... Maybe it was like
well,
supposed
it
to be
her,
a vision of Charlize
she was
Theron.
Like a shape changer in the movie.
Could have been. Anyway, I say that. I've never actually gone back and watched it again to see the naked redhead. There was also Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh, my God.
And,
awesome movie.
God, what was the... and then there was a kids movie that didn't even come in a regular DVD case. I think it came in like a... when you buy a software program and it comes in just a paper slipcover. What
wow.
was that? I don't know. It was like a Danny DeVito kids movie.
Oh,
it's like a one-word title. It's a girl's
Matilda.
Name or something.
Matilda?
That might have been it. Yeah, so I really need to just take those to half-price books and have them give me my quarter apiece.
I know. I went through this past week or a couple weeks ago just reburning every CD I had just so I had like a really crisp copy of MP3. And now I'm sitting here staring at all these DVD or these CDs, which I paid a lot of money for, and thinking, well, I should probably take them to half-price books and get my 10 cents or whatever they're going to give me for something I paid 20 bucks for. But it's like they're just taking up room. Now, the DVDs I wouldn't get rid of, but the CDs are just sitting there taking up room.
Yeah, we put all of our CDs in 2 big binders.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, like my wife wanted to keep the jewel cases.
Yeah.
So we've got like 5 or 6 Xerox boxes full of jewel cases stuffed in a closet somewhere. Anyway,
it's just taking up room. And once I've got a MP3 copy of them, to a certain extent, it doesn't matter anymore. As long as I've got multiple backups of that. So, but.
Let's blah blah blah. I saw a couple of older movies over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah,
I saw. Did I already discuss? Well, I saw Cloverfield. Did we meet since then? No, that was Cloverfield was last week, wasn't it?
No, I hadn't talked about Cloverfield.
So I saw Cloverfield.
Because I was sick.
I saw Cloverfield.
Yeah. So what'd you think of Cloverfield?
I saw opening day Friday.
Yeah.
I went to see a 4:20 p.m. show. At the Redmond Town Center. and paid $9.50. I have never heard a full price being before 5 o'clock.
Well, I noticed when Rambo was up, that's what they mentioned on their thing. It says, "Here's the prices except for Fridays." They don't have the matinee price.
And John, who I went with, was saying that apparently, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's now like the first screening only or some really restrictive thing like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the Redmond Town Center, I don't know if it's all the auditoriums, but the one we were in was just like an old-school, non-stadium seating, small auditorium. You know, if you're paying that much money, like, you know, Pacific Place, and it's, you know, it's newer, and it's, you know, it's a really nice environment, assuming it's, you know, projected right and everything. But yeah. I was, you know, I just had another one of these, why am I paying $10 at 4 in the afternoon? This is retarded. I can wait for the DVD. And it was just another one of those, oh, why do I need to see this the first weekend? This is ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah, I hear you.
It was, you know, just to sort of go through the whole thing, I knew there was supposed to be a Star Trek teaser on it for the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek film. But what they did was they attached it to the film itself.
Yeah.
And so what happens is the theater attaches all its trailers, and then they run, and then they do that little, and now your feature presentation with the dancing piece of film.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, I guess no Star Trek. So I double check that my phone's turned off. I'm distracted by John offering me popcorn or something. Meanwhile, the Star Trek trailer has started, and I had kind of known what it was going to be, but you know, it starts out with people welding stuff, and I was like, oh,
I thought
I thought it was, honestly, from the way it looked, I thought it was just another production company. You know, like J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot in association with, and I thought this was like a production company, thing. And it's halfway over before I realize, oh, this is the Star Trek thing. I should have been paying attention to this. So that was kind of irritating.
I saw it online.
Well, hold on.
I was
official version or just a YouTube version?
Just a YouTube version. No, actually, no, official version, because it was from a Paramount website.
Is that up yet? Okay, I saw a YouTube version, and it was really poorly done. What a shock!
Yeah.
So I need to try and find the official version and watch it again.
Yeah, I just I was underwhelmed because I mean I totally got the concept and it looked good, but it looked like kind of like a cologne ad or something with this stylized workers creating the Starship Enterprise, but in a ridiculous way. I mean, it was all style. So it just looked dumb, these welders circa 1930. I know they're welding it much, much later than currently now, but they looked like 1930 welders from the Empire State Building or something, and it just kind of dumb. But that said, I mean, it's okay, whatever. The movie's going to be great, obviously. So
anyway, so then the movie starts, and of course I knew it was going to be I knew it was going to be handheld, but the ramifications of that didn't really sink in. I guess John told me they had a sign on the box office window that says, you know, it's, you might get nauseous from this filming style, which, you know, props to the theater, which is opposed to their usual, oh, hey, there's a big giant scratch in the first reel of the film, or hey, our projector's broken, but we're going to show it to you anyway. Anyway, about 20 minutes in, I got really nauseous. I didn't actually think I was going to throw up, but I was definitely motion sick. And it pretty much, you know, it stabilized a little, but then I felt nauseous the entire rest of the night until I woke up the next morning. And I don't recall feeling nauseous after watching the Blair Witch Project, of which this has more than a few similarities. That being said, I really enjoyed the film. I mean, if you look at a trailer or a commercial, there's no surprises. It's very representative of what the film is. Which is basically, you know, a monster just appears in New York and starts going to town, and it's this group of friends and their reaction to it, and they're trying to get away. And I thought it was very well done. There were one or two bits where you're like, huh? One of which is, you know, the army shows up in a very short amount of time with, you know, tanks ready to go. And my first thought was, well, how close is there, you know, like a National Guard armory to Manhattan? You know, I can see maybe out, you know, out in one of the other boroughs a ways away, but they were on scene, well, like, and immediately.
And if it's National Guard, they're, of course, in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. I mean, obviously that's true. I kind of let that little bit slide. But and they were, like, new, you know, well, newer M1, A1 Abrams. They weren't, like, you know, sometimes the Guard gets, you know, last generation stuff. Anyway,
yeah, they're in a Bradley fighting vehicle.
Yeah, anyway, they appeared very quickly. Aside from that, you know, sort of the conceit is that it's this going away party and the buddy was filming the whole thing. And then when this all goes down, he's like, oh, I have to document this. So he's just dragging this camcorder along with him everywhere they go. And it works.
So he has multiple tapes or something?
No, it's just one. It's almost contiguous.
So where does the guy get a giant roll of tape, or a 2-hour tape?
Well, they don't address the length of the tape, really.
Okay, that's what I was wondering about.
Some of the newer ones, don't they have it? I mean, he actually does make a reference to, did you use the
mini
same
DV
tape?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Don't some of the newer ones that record to hard drive have like a 2-hour capacity?
Possibly, yeah.
I say that, but they actually, there's a line in the film about, oh, hey, did you switch tapes? Because there was one in there that you're taping over. So having now given them that out, they didn't take it. Anyway, and so what's interesting about that is you only see, you know, the events from this one perspective. And, you know, there's a bit where they do interact with sort of this army command post. And because the camera angle doesn't switch and you never get to see what these other people are doing, it's only from their perspective. And the way they chose to impart the information, like through overheard comments or flashes of what's on screens or whatever, I thought was very effective and very, very believable from, you know, that sounds plausible. It seems like that would be a plausible reaction from the military to do this, to do what you're overhearing without overselling it. Because I think the reaction would be to really focus on that and say, look, see how we're being authentic? We're focusing on what they're doing. And they didn't do that. It was very much, you know, incumbent upon you to realize that that's a peripheral thing. And I thought that was brilliant because I think, you know, the gut reaction would have been to dumb it down and really focus on it. And I was so impressed by just that one thing that, like, the movie could have sucked and that would have just done it for me. What else should I say about the movie? I thought the actors, who are all, you know, non-famous people, did a great job. And there was this one thing towards the end. I can't really spoil the moment, but there's this part where this camera drops and the focus of the autofocus is shifting between basically a guy's face in the foreground and like some grass, and like, because the camera doesn't know where to focus. And I thought, I have never seen that before, and it's brilliant. And then also, it didn't end like I thought it was going to end, because you look at the commercials and the trailers and you say, oh, okay, well, I can already see the ending. And it didn't happen that way. So I was impressed. And it didn't, you know, it's only like an hour and I think Wells said it was 74 minutes. I looked on Fandango. Damn. I think it said it was 124 or an hour and 24 minutes.
If you put a camcorder in SP mode, you can get an hour and a half. So maybe that is.
And so I was expecting a short film, but I didn't really feel gypped at the end of it. It doesn't feel like, oh man, I wish I had another half hour of content. So that was good. So they did a good job in terms of pacing. But anyway, I definitely enjoyed it. I don't know that I need to own this on DVD. So I don't know how much it cost to make, but it seemed like it was very good filmmaking. And obviously, J.J. Abrams wasn't the director. It's one of those where he's going to get associated with it, and everyone's going to think he's the director. But the director did a great job, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I heard Cloverfield was $25 million. That's how much they spent on it.
But well, that was, I mean, I think they made 47 or something.
Yeah, well, that's not including marketing, but it's definitely going to be powerful. You know, I forgot to mention the trailers in front of Rambo. It was the funniest thing. there. I don't know if you were aware of this. When Seattle International Film Festival came out last summer, they had a movie. I think it won the Audience Award, and it's this kind of low budget British movie, and it's called Son of Rambo, and they spell Rambo for some reason, R-A-M-B-O-W, and it's basically an art fun low budget British film that has a limited audience, and it's about this kid who decides that he wants to make a movie. It takes place in the mid 80s and in some like industrial town in Britain, and everybody rallies around making this movie, and the movie kind of becomes a bigger deal, and it's a comedy, and apparently it's a great movie. Well, anyway, sure enough, they decided to put that trailer in front of Rambo, and it's funny because the audience could not be different. The typical audience for Son of Rambo could not be different, because it looks like one of those art house kind of movies like Millions or whatever that's going to have a very limited appeal. But I think they realize, you know, fudge it. If people are going to see this movie or be interested in this, you know, you might get somebody in front of Rambo to be interested. And sure enough, my dad and uncle just thought it looked great and wanted to go see this little British movie. So it was smart, but it was kind of funny to, usually you see the typical action movie pre-trailers, and then you had this one weird oddball trailer, and it was perfect.
Anyway, so then also last weekend, I ended up seeing two other older movies just because I was flipping around, and TNT HD had them. So they had Stealth. Did you ever see Stealth?
I have never had no interest in seeing Stealth.
Oh, man.
It just looks so awful.
Oh, and it delivered. But of course, I noticed TNT does this on Law and Orders and whatnot, where they will save time by showing the credits of the thing that was playing, and you know, and crunch it down, and then start showing the next thing as the credits are playing. Which, you know, on a Law and Order, who cares? When they show the movie back to back with itself, and you see the ending of the movie as you're starting to watch the movie, that's lame. So anyway, I watched this thing, and the only reason I watched it was because it was written by W.D. Richter, who directed Buckaroo Banzai, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, Across the Eighth Dimension, and directed Big Trouble in Little China.
He didn't direct. John Carpenter directed that. He wrote it.
Oh, you're right. Well, I thought so.
The only reason I say that, I know that.
Did I say he
ironically,
directed?
I just watched The Thing last night with John Carpenter.
Well,
did he
direct Buckaroo Banzai?
Oh yeah, he directed Buckaroo.
Okay,
Banzai.
Then he wrote Big Trouble, because I knew he wrote one and directed the other. So I'm sorry. And I love those two films, and I thought, you know, I knew that this Stealth had been poorly reviewed, but I thought, well, we'll just see what happens, and it was horrible. It had Josh Lucas, Jessica Biel, and Jamie Foxx. And it's, you know, it's in the near future, and they're flying these super-duper jet planes. And Sam Shepard is their Navy boss. And, you know, they're flying the super planes, and they're a cohesive unit. And then there's, like, the next generation of the plane is computer-controlled. And it was just so bad on so many levels. You know, the flight suits for these things had sort of a clear acrylic helmet faceplate instead of having the standard, airplane mask, which of course obscures the face. But it looked so cheap, and their G suits looked so cheap. The planes themselves actually looked okay, and one of the big deals was they had the cooperation of the U.S. Navy, so they filmed on the carrier, the Lincoln. And that looked good. And then the part where they eventually get transferred to the Lincoln, and then the robot plane shows up, and the command center for the robot plane takes up an enormous amount of space in the hangar deck. And I don't want to pretend like I'm a military expert, but I've actually been on the Lincoln, you know, during Seafair a couple of years ago. And
I was on it too.
They had tours, and you could be on the flight deck, which is the top, and the hangar deck, which is just below, where all the planes, you know, are serviced and live. And it took up an enormous amount of space in the hangar deck. And there is, you know, every every inch of space is accounted for, you know, because that's the way it is. So that, you know, if you're going to go through this authenticity of having naval involvement, you know, make an extra step. Anyway, it was just horrible. I mean, the writing was horrible. The plot was horrible. Everything you could see coming. The acting was okay, but, you know, who cares? I'm not going to remember it was Josh Lucas in a month. Jessica Biel is hot, and they gave her every opportunity to look hot. You know, there's this ridiculous scene. They're on leave, and they're in Thailand, so they go off to some exotic waterfall in swimsuits. So, look, there's beefcake Josh Lucas, and there's hot-looking Biel in a swimsuit. Later on, her flight suit magically transforms into a skin-tight suit as she's running around. Jamie Foxx just looked like he was completely slumming.
And if it's kind of sad. This was his first movie back from winning the Oscar.
I thought that he actually won the Oscar while they were filming. I could be.
I think that he did. And what was funny was I remember when they were doing. He clearly had to do publicity for this, and it was funny to see him. He just clearly did not want to be doing the publicity for this movie. He did his best, but he could barely, you know, talk about the movie, and he just sort of clearly had moved mentally beyond that kind of movie in his mind anymore. It was awful.
Well, I mean, there's other ridiculousness. I mean, the enemies end up being your typical, oh, there's a Middle Eastern terrorist, and there's a break, you know, there's loose nukes in, you know, Russia. There's a breakaway Russian Republic. Oh, and there's North Korea. It's like they stuffed in every single, you know, token modern age bad guy. You know, they can't use, you know, the Soviet Union anymore, which used to be the bad guy. Now it's always the same, you know, token bad guys. And the fact that they stuffed all of them into one movie was, you know, I'll give them credit. That was impressive. God, there was one other thing. Oh, the robot plane had a cockpit that a guy could sit in.
What's the point?
Well, and they try to address it. Why is there a cockpit? Oh, it's for maintenance purposes. You're like,
maintenance.
What? That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. You know, if you're gonna, one of the advantages of building a robot plane is you can build it smaller because you don't have to build in all this life support gear for the pilot.
Yeah.
So why would you leave space for someone to sit that isn't ever going to sit there? And of course, you know, it was just a ridiculous excuse to have the ability for, you know, Josh Lucas to sit in it and fly it at the end of the film. It was just absolutely ridiculous. You know, it's one of those, I saw no element whatsoever that the same guy that wrote, you know, Big Trouble in Little China, you know, touched this. This just looked like total modern-day action pablum.
Hmm. Sounds great.
Man, what a waste of my 2 hours, even though I was obviously doing about three other things at the same time on my computer. And then I saw Blade Trinity.
Have
you seen Blade Trinity?
No, I have such an aversion to... I love Blade too, but I have such an aversion to what's his name,
Wesley Snipes.
Snipes, and he just seems like such a jerk. And the only thing I remember about this movie was Ryan Reynolds pumped up for it. So all of a sudden, you see this growth hormone enhanced Ryan Reynolds in the movie. But other than that, I don't know much about it.
Well, it was it was Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel. You know, sort of invigorating new life into the franchise along with Wesley Snipes. And, you know, I don't really have anything against Wesley Snipes, but, it obviously was not a good movie. You know, they sort of, whether it was his choice or they told him to do it, he sort of goes through as this ultra cool, you know, everything's stylized and, you know, after I kill the guy, I'm going to stay in a cool pose for a beat so that I look cool. You know, I remember one of the deals about, you know, the Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel, they're supposed to be sort of the Gen X, you know, we don't have any respect, but we're vampire hunters. You know, he had on his sort of fighting getup, he had that Hello, My Name Is badge and then F.U. written on it. Except because I saw it on TNT, it was Hello, My Name Is Suck You. which apparently is the appropriate version of that.
Suck you.
It was pretty funny, actually, to see them tap dance around some clear swearing there. But the part of the plot of this film was that the actual original Dracula is involved. And it ends up being Dominic Purcell, who is currently starring in Prison Break. And nothing against Dominic Purcell, but he is not Dracula. it's like this ridiculous scene where he's walking down the street and sees basically a goth store who sells all this Dracula stuff, and he goes in and he's looking at all this Dracula merchandise and, you know, ends up killing, you know, the goth, you know, cashiers, and it's...
I could get behind that.
Yeah, but it was just the stupidest scene in a stupid movie, and, you know, for some reason I had heard it was, like, kind of cool, partly because of Jessica Biel and Ryan Reynolds, and, you know, he was okay in it, and, you know, one of the things they did with her character is, oh, what's she doing? Oh, she's putting together a playlist for her iPod while she's killing vampires. And they show her putting together songs and an iTunes playlist. And you're just thinking, what are you doing? Why do you think that's a good idea? Anyway, I'm just kind of...
It just looks terrible, and I just heard too many set reports about Wesley Snipes' behavior that I just I couldn't get behind it at all. And I really barely remember Blade, the first one, but I really liked Blade 2. But I had no interest in this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to...
Del Toro had moved on, and I had moved on.
Yeah, it was just... But it's movies I'd seen recently, so... Felt the need to.
Well, the one other movie I saw lately is last night I decided to watch The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing again. I hadn't seen that in quite a while. And boy, that movie really holds up. John Carpenter is one of my favorite directors of when I was a youngster. And his movies are so bad and they date so poorly. They looked low budget when they came out, and they had a kind of certain scuzzy effectiveness, but sometimes they're just bad, and I love watching them. But even like ones like They Live, which I saw again the other day, with Roddy Piper, and it's a great conceit and it's a fun movie, but it's so terribly done. They date so poorly, but this movie, because it takes place on this Antarctic ice station, it's so not dated. It just looks fresh. It's so well done. I mean, really well done. And it's a great movie. And it was kind of funny because they brought up the point that in the commentary track, and the commentary track was actually recorded almost 10 years ago, but they brought up the point in the commentary track when the movie came out, it was considered this ultimate and scuzzy, bloody effects violence. But nowadays, you'd look at the movie and it would be and they said it's this ultimate in psychological terror, because the scuzzy violence just seems kind of minor compared to what you can see today with computer effects and stuff. But, and I remember when that movie came out, my God, I was so into this, and I remember I would read all the magazines like Fangoria and Cinefantastic and get so excited reading about this guy, Rob Bottin, this effects genius who'd done The Howling. And I was so excited and reading about it. And it's funny reading about listening from their perspective, because to them, he was this 21-year-old kid they hired to do stuff, and half the effects didn't work out. And they're going, oh, Rob, and this and that. I, when I was like 12, was hearing about this and going, oh my God, this guy, this older guy working in Hollywood, well, the guy was 21 years old. It's unbelievable they hired him to do all these effects. So from a different perspective, it seemed equally unbelievable. But anyway, it really holds up well.
That's cool.
So, and it had a terrific documentary. It's one of those movies where they didn't skimp. They really went to town and did a great documentary. So it was
really. I might have to.
It was fun. I enjoyed that. I enjoy the John Carpenter DVDs because he invariably gets Kurt Russell to appear in to do the commentary, and Kurt Russell seems to be having so damn much fun in these commentaries. He enjoys people. He enjoys being an actor. And so this one, the Escape from New York one, the Big Trouble in Little China, he has so much fun making those. Although one disturbing thing is, I'm assuming it's John Carpenter, Oh my God, he must have smoked two packs of cigarettes during the commentary track, because you can hear him lighting up, taking his puff, and then literally 2 minutes later you hear it, that damn lighter lighting up again. It's a little disturbing, but it was cool. I'm not sure why I decided to watch it. I'm glad I did, because it holds up very well. Great movie.
That's cool. I've been watching really hardly any TV aside from, you know, the Daily Show and you know, random stuff like MythBusters. So I really don't have anything to talk about. The strike, had the Directors Guild made their deal the last time we recorded one?
No.
So the Directors Guild made a deal with the AMPTP, and you know, it seems like it's kind of a complex deal because there really hasn't been I haven't seen a tremendous reaction from the WGA saying it's either good or bad. It seems like, you know, there was some progress made, like there was, you know, a deal on new media, but it was really complex, and it wasn't as much as what the writers wanted, so yeah. They can't just say we'll take what the directors got. So it really didn't make anything. It doesn't seem to have brought any clarity to the situation, other than apparently the Writers Guild and the AMPTP are talking officially again.
Yeah.
And the Writers Guild dropped their demands for animation and reality writers.
Yeah, once again, they threw them under the bus.
Well, we don't need to rehash everything, but it's unfortunate that the directors who didn't want to... without a lot of analysis over the actual deal, it's really hard to comment on, so I don't know. But from a gut level, I'm disappointed that the directors didn't stick by the writers.
Yeah.
And say, you know what, we may not agree with everything that they're trying to do, but their points are valid. We want to get paid too. I don't know. It's healthier for the industry if everyone is paid fairly.
Yeah.
And it just seems like they didn't have as much interest in that. Do you have any TV comments you'd like to make?
No, I can't think of anything I've been watching. The Wire, great. Can't think of anything else. New MythBusters. But other than that,
You know what we never did? You did one of your first posts on the new website was your brief review of Smash Lab. And I've seen commercials on Discovery for this thing, and I've never watched one, but the commercials really set it up as it's like what they've done is they've taken all the money shots out of MythBusters and combined them into a commercial for this. We're like, hey, look, here's something exploding, and here's a random 20-something group of hosts reacting to the explosion and jumping up and down and hopping and going, explosions are cool. Is there an actual premise that, like, we're going to blow, X things up per show because why? What is the premise?
Well, there is no real premise. That's the near as I can remember, that's the thing. They're just deciding to examine things to see. Well, I mean, it would be like, okay, if I remember right, it was like they went to some trailer home and seeing just how much a trailer park home can handle, how much wind it can handle. So that gives us an excuse to blow wind. I mean, it's not a bad premise. It just feels like they have disdain for their audience. It's like they say, well, if you love MythBusters, you'll love this, as if they've reduced everything I love about MythBusters down to them blowing stuff up. And that's not why I love MythBusters. I love that part of it, but I like because of the personalities involved. I like because of the nature of the show. It can go in different directions. And this here, it's just all about, let's get, like you're saying, the 20-somethings. They actually announce them. The ideas guy. They call one guy the ideas guy. And then they have the designer or whatever. And all this other stuff, it's so stupid. And then seeing them, I don't know, had there been no MythBusters, I might have enjoyed the show. But it just feels like a response to MythBusters, and I feel protective of MythBusters. And I know how Discovery will take concepts and run them into the ground, destroying all of the shows. They did it with the robot shows. They did it with the garbage war kind of shows. And I'm fearful they'll do it with this and kill both shows. So I want to hate it. I don't ever want Mythbusters to go off the air. Pardon?
I had been thinking about that recently, the whole, like, Junkyard Wars thing, because I used to love that show.
I did, too.
But, I mean, there is a point where you've made, you know, how many times can they build a trebuchet?
Yeah.
You know, how many times can they build whatever it is that you want them to build before you run out of ideas?
But not just that. They did, don't forget, they did two other shows. Like, they did this horrible show with the former host of it, and then Henry Rollins.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was so dumb. And then they did, oh, and then let's show the original British version of Garbage Wars and the American version and repurpose it. And then they did like another show, and it was, they went so far into the well that it, you just got sick of it. And then the same thing happened to the robot shows. And it was, so, unfortunately, the robot shows are the things that ultimately gave birth to Mythbusters, but it was just...
Well, Mythbusters takes itself, not seriously, but it doesn't dumb itself down. It's like, here's the science, you know, and here it is. And it seems like Smash Lab is dumbing itself down to try to appeal to the lowest common denominator, and Mythbusters doesn't do that.
Well, exactly. It's like, let's make it bigger and bolder, and let's not worry about all this other stuff, and let's manufacture some personalities to interact. And it's, I don't know, I hated it.
So we can move into the video game realm. I borrowed Call of Duty 4 from a buddy, and played it. And it's a stunningly beautiful game.
Sure.
It's just very, of all of the quote unquote war games, it's the most graphically impressive that I have played. It did, you know, the single player campaign is short. I think it's even shorter than Halo 3. Some of the gameplay is interesting because there are parts of it when you're following your squad leader. You don't even have to worry about where to go. Just follow this guy, and boom, you do that enough, and you're at the end of the mission. And then there are other times when clearly you need to take the lead for really no readily apparent reason, and nobody will move until you move. And maybe there was some subtle bit of dialogue like, hey, you're now in charge of the squad. But I remember once when the guy said to take point, and it didn't matter. I didn't take point, and the other guy still went ahead anyway. Because one thing I hate about, really about games in general, but especially, you know, manifests itself in first-person shooters is, where am I supposed to be going now? You know, you get kind of a larger map, and it's not clear where you're supposed to be going, because either you don't have an objective, or the objective is unclear, and you're like, well, am I supposed to go up the stairs? What am I doing? And there were a few times in Call of Duty where I sort of felt like that, like, what am I doing now?
Yeah.
And unfortunately it dealt with, you know, loose nukes in a, Russian Republic, and it dealt with, you know, some Middle Eastern terrorists. I don't think it dealt with North Korea at all.
Wow.
Props
for not going that direction.
And I didn't end up playing any of the multiplayer, which I understand, much like Halo 3, is, you know, the majority of the fun of the game is in the multiplayer. But, you know, I didn't play any just because I haven't had the time. And since it's not my game, I'll have to probably give it back and not have to worry about the multiplayer at all. So it's, you know, assuming that you get into the multiplayer, it seems like a really good game, and I would recommend buying it. And I believe it, along with Assassin's Creed, is one of those that's been discounted to $40 pretty regularly on sale occasions, certainly pre-holidays. A pretty well-done game. I guess that's the end of my review.
Well, if I had money, I'd buy it. But I played, I decided, because I have no money, and I decided to play through the original Half-Life on Orange Box again, and I played through that when it first came out on PC like 3-4 years ago, and at the time it was definitely the best game ever, and it still is in my mind, although it's been surpassed by a lot of other things. It's hard to remember the innovative things by it. But mostly, I'm just stunned at how long it is, how varied it is. It's amazing to go through this game and have so many completely different styles of gameplay. And you look at something like Halo, which they poured money in and other stuff, but it's so short, and the scenery is relatively the same, except for the, like, the battle in the colon of that beast and other stuff. It's all the kind of the same look, and Half-Life changes so distinctly in so many different places. It's really remarkable, but mostly I'm just stunned, even knowing what I'm doing, and for whatever reason, I think they massively dumbed it down, because it was so easy so much of the time, in a way that it wasn't easy the first time, but it still took me 12, 13 hours to get through the thing. And I think the first time I played it took maybe 40 hours, but it was still pretty incredible. And then there's one, towards the end of the game, one thing happens, this gravity gun. It suddenly allows you to grab people and shoot people and pull them and kill them, and using ragdoll physics and stuff. And it was so incredible the first time it happened. I mean, it was so incredible. I wanted to get on a phone and start calling people. And I'd read reviews, and everybody else had the same reaction. It was like, oh my God. And at the time, you know, this was 3 years ago, you didn't want to give it away. So you'd hear people talk about, and there's a point, and they all kind of look at each other, nod knowingly in the reviews. They know it was such a great point. Well, this time I knew it was coming, but it was still, for whatever reason, I kind of was trying to remember how late in the game was it. I didn't realize it literally is in the 97th percent of the game. You know, I forgot it was that far in, but it was still great. I just want a whole game where I can grab people and throw them, like that. But, so it was fun to play that through as I go through all of the stuff.
Well,
now that I can't afford a new game.
I actually just put that in for the first time since November. I put that in this morning. Mainly because I think I stopped playing Orange Box when Mass Effect came out. And it took me a while to get through Mass Effect. And I actually had to drag my feet for a while because I was going to lend it to my buddy who was going to lend me Assassin's Creed. But then his wife said, well, he's getting it for Christmas, so don't give it to him before Christmas. And I had to drag my feet on finishing Mass Effect. And then he lent me Assassin's Creed anyway, and so I got through that. And then he lent me Call of Duty 4, so I had to get through that. So now I'm done with the games, you know,
with the borrowed games.
All the late. Not only that, but there really isn't anything else out right now that I'm really dying to play. And I was really eager to play those two games. And then I've gone through Rock Band. I've finished the solo tour on medium, so I can start going through on hard. But it's, you know, picking up the guitar controller and playing, you know, Rock Band, or I imagine Guitar Hero, is a different mindset than sitting on the couch and being a little more passive.
Really?
So yeah, it's more active to do Rock Band, and so it's not just you have to be in the mood to play video games. Anyway. So I kind of needed a non-active video game, so I put Orange Box back in, because I still haven't finished it. I need to get through the main Half-Life 2, and then I still have Episode 1 and Episode 2. So
I actually stopped on the final challenge in Episode 2, and I still need to, I guess I'll play through Episode 1 again, although, the only reason I want to do it is so I can play through with the developer's commentary. Hey, speaking of Mass Effect, so did you see all the big hullabaloo with Fox News and Mass Effect this weekend?
Whoa.
That was so goddamn funny. I mean, it was perfect how it played out, because it just in a nutshell showed how the media landscape works today, how these news shows will pull on experts, and they kind of have a compact with the experts. You don't need to know that much about this. You're just going to talk in generalized platitudes and or generalized comments, and we're going to sort of inflate you up as an expert to help you sell books, and then it'll be fine. And the problem is they brought in an expert to talk about a game without realizing that this can destroy games, and these gamers are going to be ticked off. And she talked about Mass Effect, never having played the game, never having seen it, and start talking about how it objectifies women and how there's all this graphic nudity, and she was wrong, and Fox was wrong.
Well, there's two different to my knowledge, there's two different events. One was that there was a columnist, before the Fox stuff happened, there was a columnist that wrote a, you know, video games are destroying civilization article about Mass Effect, talking about all this horrendous graphic alien bestiality sex going on. So there was a reaction to that, saying this guy clearly hasn't played the game, has no idea what he's talking about.
There was also some YouTube video floating
around. And apparently when confronted with that, he kind of apologized without really admitting he was wrong. And then I guess all this stuff with Fox happened, with Electronic Arts actually saying, you know what, can you please correct your statements? Because what you were saying is factually inaccurate. The things you're saying that happen in this game don't happen. And aside from that, it's clearly rated for mature players. It's not rated for, you know, 12 and under. It's, you know, rated for whatever it is, 14 and over.
Well, they are, but the point Fox would make, and I think it's a legitimate one, is so is Halo 3. Now, if you ever listen to Halo 3, if you've played it, it's a parade of 12-year-olds saying the F word. So it's pretty clear.
Well, that's different. That's multiplayer. Without that, the game developer isn't coding in the F word every 10 seconds.
No, I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. Saying if you're saying it's rated mature, you're supposed to say kids shouldn't be playing it, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So why is it that only kids are playing it? Why is it when I play Halo 3, all I hear is 12-year-olds saying the F word? Now, my point isn't that it's the F word. My point is that it's 12-year-olds, meaning that their point, which I would totally agree with Fox News on, is that the whole system of whether a game is rated M for mature is a complete farce.
Well,
you know, any 12-year-old that wants to play Mass Effect is going to play Mass Effect. That said, clearly this is not Grand Theft Auto. This is a game that is complex that probably wouldn't appeal to a lot of kids, and the whole sex thing is such a minor, ridiculous fruition of a storyline. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you're bringing up two things, and one is you're absolutely right, because all you see is like half a butt cheek.
Yeah.
And some kind of silly music as it's happening. But beyond that, your point about the ratings and whatnot, you're right in that pretty much any kid can get any game. But that's more of a societal issue overall, because there is a rating system, and the fact that it doesn't account for much isn't really the fault of the publishers or even the ratings board itself. It's more a parental societal thing of them saying, of never getting past the fact that video games are for kids, and people haven't realized that, you know, there are, you know, there's these ridiculous, they're destroying civilization stories that pop up all the time, but it never that never translates into appropriate parenting and saying, you know what, you can't play this game yet.
Well, I wouldn't disagree, but I would say that's a legitimate thing for Fox to bring up, as opposed to everything else they brought up, which was a lie.
Well, then to me, the legitimate response from EA is to say, we rated it for mature audiences. We, you know, we tell the retailers, you know, this is who you're supposed to sell it to.
I agree. So we're not in disagreement at all. I'm just saying that I can't fault them for I can't fault for Fox for saying we want to bring up this legitimate aspect to this story. I can fault Fox we also want to talk about the virulent sex that permeates the whole thing. We want to talk about the fact that women are objectified in this thing, the fact that you're a guy and you choose which women to conquest. Those are out-and-out factual lies. And Fox News' response was weak. Their classic response is, well, we invited EA to come on. And it's like, no. Your job, EA does not have to come on. That doesn't mean you get a free pass to lie if they choose not to come on. And that's what Fox did. And to that author's credit, they had her in the New York Times yesterday, and she was saying, yeah, you know what? I was wrong. And since then, I've over the shoulder watched somebody play for 2.5 hours of Mass Effect, and I realize how wrong I was, basically, she's saying. And I thought that the great response from the gamer community was to go on Amazon, and they all started, and they all reviewed her book and reviewed it horribly down to one star.
I was just going to mention
that. And the best reviews were like, this is a terrible, terrible book, and I'm sure I'd feel even more strongly about it had I actually read it. But I don't think reading a book is necessary for offering an opinion on this book. I mean, just really quite funny responses. Not snarky, funny. I mean, consistently funny, good reviews. And to her credit, she took it kind of all in passing. I mean, it was just, it was painful and everything. The people who are coming out poorly are the horrible as Fox, because of their reluctance to even admit that they were building something up unnecessarily. And were I Mass Effect and BioWare, I would be really, I would totally be freaked out, because they know how the whole hot coffee thing almost destroyed Rockstar Games, just destroyed them. And this was nothing like that, and they know how it could have an effect on that. I mean, it could make a huge, huge difference. If some person, some mom was just walking the stores and thinking, I'm going to buy this for my, of course, underage child, they're thinking, oh, is that that game where they have all that alien sex? I'll move on. And, I mean, they know how that stuff can hammer them. But
I agree. You know, something that just occurred to me we haven't discussed, not that there's a whole lot we can add, but that Heath Ledger died.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's sad.
I was at work, and one of the coworkers in my room, one of the girls, suddenly shrieks in the middle of the day, "Oh my God, Heath Ledger died!" And my first thought was, "Oh, that sucks. I enjoyed his acting." But she and one or two of the other girls in the room just started carrying on, and before you know it, like, their instant messenger status, because we use that at work to talk between the various locations. You know, within 15 minutes, we're sort of remembrances of Heath Ledger in their instant messenger status. Christ. And you're just like, you know what? I'm sad the guy died, but can we keep it in perspective here? Can you not go quite so overboard? Yeah. They still don't really know why. I just saw a thing on Wells where he was reporting from TMZ or something that it might actually have just been, you know, his heart stopped.
Well, if you read Wells' initial message, he was heavily, within minutes after it being announced, he did his thing on there, and he was heavily alluding to it was almost certainly a suicide. And
well, you know what? When they find pills nearby,
hey, I don't care. You don't say that at all. Don't say that at all. And I think that's just awful. Just awful. I mean, the pain the family must be going through, and then reading in the New York Times, reading in places like Jeffrey Wells's column, and he extended even further. Just don't. You don't know. And by the way, the stories of the pills nearby was not true. The guy had
But that's what was being reported at
the
time.
Well, no, but again, what I'm saying is you recognize, but they also reported other things, like it was Mary Kate Olsen's apartment. So in other words, you just say, you know what? I'm going to take, this just happened. I'm going to take one breath before I start reiterating this, because there's a good chance some of this is going to be wrong. And by me repeating that, in some way, I'm going to add pain to the family. Some way. So I'm not going to add pain to the family. That's what should have happened. And I think it's funny, Jeff Wells isn't even sort of mentioning that he was on the suicide bandwagon early on. He's now talking about this other angle. I'm thinking, dude, it was clear how painful this was for the family. And it was very clear, their first statement. And by the way, he may have committed suicide. I don't know. All I know is nobody's going to die if you wait a little bit. So, hang on a sec. Come on in! Sorry, it's my dad here. We're going to go buy tile. So, anyway, I just found it kind of painful and bad that they jumped on that. Hang on a second. Come on in, Dad! Anyway, sorry. He can't hear me.
Apparently not. You know, I totally get where you're coming from, but for me, what he did wasn't that inappropriate. I think we just disagree on that. I didn't read what he was saying as overly speculative. I mean, I think what he was saying was, well, you know, I've been in this business long enough that usually when these things happen, it's this. And I totally see where you're coming from, and I totally respect your opinion. I just have a different take on it.
Yeah.
That being said, Friday night I was at dinner with some friends, and one of them sort of randomly brought it up and said, oh, yeah, that new Batman film is going to tank. And I was like, are you kidding?
You're an idiot.
There's no way.
It will have nothing. It will make no difference whatsoever.
I know. I was just stunned that, I mean, they're not as into movies, I think, certainly as we are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it will literally have no difference. No one who was thinking about seeing this movie is going to let the fact that Heath Ledger died
And somebody's really into Heath Ledger was probably not going to watch a movie because he's, like, unrecognizable and, I don't know, it's just crazy. I was thinking back on the movies I've seen him in. I still never seen Brokeback Mountain. I've had it in my DVD I've had it here for 2 years, but I've never seen it. I guess I should watch it. But I do remember him. I had him in that Brothers Grimm, which I thought was a terrible movie, and I don't remember much about him, but I do have him in that Lords of Dogtown movie or whatever that's called, the Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah, that's it.
That he is so good in that movie, so unrecognizable, playing this hard to describe, almost, I don't know, this crazy ex old aging surfer. It stunned me when I found out Heath Ledger was 28, because he must have been in his mid-20s when he did Lords of Dogtown, and he just is such a great, wizened old soul. I mean, really, a really great performance in a so-so movie. That it was, I don't know, just it was pretty amazing. I feel bad. I honestly haven't seen him in hardly anything other than knowing that he was unbelievably good in Brokeback Mountain, a movie that I've avoided seeing for certain, you know, reasons, which I normally don't avoid that, but I guess I should just sit down and watch it.
Well, the other, he was in the middle of filming a film for Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, another Terry Gilliam movie.
You know,
poor Terry Gilliam, he can never catch a break.
The guy just has horrible luck, and so they're, you know, the last, I think I read something yesterday that maybe Johnny Depp was going to step in.
But they going to refilm the whole stuff, or?
That wasn't decided, but apparently there's a point in the film where a transition happens where you actually could have another actor play the same role,
wow,
and it wouldn't thematically be a disaster.
Wow. It's got a terrible name. I immediately think of that horrible Dustin Hoffman, Mr.
Magorian's
Magic
Emporium,
and this has some name, something like that. I don't know what they were thinking.
Actually reminds me of that Simpsons episode with Troy McClure, and at the end he was going to star in, now I can't remember it.
Hmm.
Never mind. That was a horrible thing to bring up since I don't have a punchline to end it with. All right. Well, if you're
I gotta go.
Your dad's
job.
There waiting, we should probably go ahead and end it.
Cool.
So, you guys rock. At mustardayonnaise.com does something to some of our email addresses. And tune in next time for more insightful commentary. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
Thanks for listening.